Okay, so I'm doing part three in our fall commitment series called What's in the Way is the Way. And I'll be working with chapter four that's called You Are Not Alone. And the title of my talk is How Do You Spell Transformation? So we're going to do a little play on the idea of how do we spell transformation and how do we think in terms of an incantation that produces transformation as opposed to some of the conditions that we face in our lives. And so I want to begin with just mentioning that the author, Mary O'Malley, says that we live typically in clouds of struggle, and that we are basically surrounded by these beliefs that we took on as very young individuals, and they serve as if we're under a spell. We're under some kind of incantation that has taken over us. And yet these spells or these beliefs aren't the truth of us, and they can be lifted. But we need to recognize that we're under the operation of a spell. And so one of the dynamics that the author points out is that even though we believe that we live in a world that we're separate and apart, this experience of as if we're alone, as if we're separate, is an illusion. We think we're alone. It appears as if that's the reality. And so spells keep us from being in touch with a dimension of ourself that is present, always present, and is a part of what we can draw upon as our support. We can think of that dimension of ourself as the meadow, as the author describes, or as our higher self. And we can think of the clouds that surround us are this dynamic of struggle that we're always having to force something or to coax something or to make something happen if we're to experience a modicum of happiness or empowerment, so to speak. So Marianne Williamson says, because our consciousness is tied to the physical manifestation of reality, we are also tied to a belief in separation. In other words, we cannot necessarily, as a natural part, differentiate the reality of the apparent separation from how we are within ourselves. We feel separate and apart because our physical reality mirrors that separation, mirrors that diversity. But we know on the level of science, on the level of principle, that we're all one. That there's nothing that really separates us other than what lives in our own consciousness, that lives in our own mental activity. And so separation lives in our BS, our belief system. I know you thought I was referring to something else. So it's important that we understand that the unintended consequence of living as if we're separate apart is that we come to the conclusion that we're not safe. In addition to not being alone, we're not safe. And so what that compels from us, instead of opening ourselves and welcoming our life experience, it has us focused on and hypersensitive to how our life looks and feels. And it's important to know that how our life looks and feels causes us to react or to engage with what's happening. Byron Katie, I love this quote. I'm the cause of my suffering, but only all of it. So let's just check in. Can you see how you are, maybe not all of it, in part causing your own suffering? Okay, so that's what this talk is about. How do we stop doing that? How do we stop inflicting upon ourselves this belief that there's something wrong with us or what's happening in the world? And so it requires of us to override all the conditioning that has us gathering evidence as to why our life is against us, or why we have to be afraid, why we have to run simulations to find out whether or not we're okay or safe. And so part of our effort is that we have to relinquish the mind's fixation on having to have all the outer world be and look okay in order for us to feel safe. What if the formula works the other way? That we have to set our state and then the outer world conforms to that. Isn't that where we're wanting to go? That's where we're going to go in Ken's class. So let's focus on that. So it's important for us to really acknowledge how we create our own suffering, how we create a self-inflicted dynamic in our life. And so for me, I've discovered the three ways in which I can always count on myself to suffer. But it's what's important is for us to see these as root issues. So the first is, I know that I will suffer whenever I'm being who I am not. So if you've been through the cue process, you know what I'm talking about. And so who are we not? Well, we're not our limiting beliefs. We're not our inadequacy. We're not our unworthiness. We're not a sense that we don't matter. But if we live as if that's the truth of us, then we suffer. And we unconsciously live those limiting beliefs as the truth of us. And the way in which you can see that happening is the next time you feel uncomfortable, or the next time you need to be right, or the next time you have to have things be a certain way. Who do you have to be for that to happen? And you will see that you are being someone that you're not. You're being your limiting belief. The second cause of suffering is that when we confuse ourselves with what we have, or with what we're having. If I confuse myself with my tiny house and its journey, I'm going to suffer when I don't have control over its unfolding. And so we suffer whenever what we have is in some form of change or flux. Or if we have what we don't want, we suffer. The point is that when our identity is linked to what we have as being our sense of well-being and worth, we will suffer. We're setting ourselves up. The third way in which we suffer is that when we resist life's flow. Now, doesn't that not make sense? That when, for whatever reason, we're pushing away what is trying to connect up to us, we can be stepping outside of life's flow. Because what if the very thing that we're having is the very thing that our higher self has brought into relationship to us, but if we in our own separate self are pushing it away, we're pushing away the very mechanism that is seeking to liberate us. So we have to have a different benchmark for how we assess what's happening in our reality. And to know that whatever we're having is for us begins to set our attention in the right context. And then to be able to know that as we're able to be in the flow of life, to know that the river of life always brings us into a demonstration of our capacity to make a difference, then we can trust that flow. But we have to kind of organize our attentional awareness so we don't let the old conditioning kind of talk us out of really being heart-centered and coherent about the spiritual practices that we want to bring to the challenges that we have in our life. So the author talks about ways in which we can counteract the spells that were that run us. And so my talk title, How Do You Spell Transformation? And so my response is, you spell it ASK, or ask. And so the point here is that I'm suggesting that the way in which we can override the spells that we're in and basically step out of the circuitry of our conditioned self is to ask a question. Now here's the catch 22, is that your mind loves for you to ask questions, because that's how it creates its simulations. And so the problem is that when we ask a question, we try to answer it. Have you ever asked life a question and went about trying to answer it? You know, I asked myself, how is this tiny home gonna come without it being just kind of trashed out in the process? And so here I was spending weeks, months answering that question, except I never saw how it was going to come. I saw all the ways in which it wouldn't come. And that's what our mind does. And if we don't know that's what our mind does, we'll allow it to continue. But you see, Mary O'Malley says, no, wait a minute. We want to ask those questions because of what it opens up within us, because the question opens up a dimensional rift in our consciousness. Through asking questions, she says, without looking for an answer, you have a conscious conversation with being itself. And you discover that you're not alone. You also discover that life reveals as opposed to conceals. So, the power of the question isn't in the answer. It's in the question. And so when we're able to be in the question, without allowing our mind to answer it for us, we instead allow life to bring and reveal to us the answer. Now, that might not make too much sense in the moment, but let's kind of explore this just a little bit. So here are some questions that the author poses, that if you will ask these questions of life and not let your mind answer them, but rather allow yourself, your attention and awareness, to welcome the experiences of life that will answer that question. And so one of the things that I, in the course of this project, I had in preparation for this talk, you know, I have to kind of try on these exercises to see how they work for you all, because I'm not going to share anything that doesn't work for me. So here I am asking, well, how is it possible that this house make this journey? You see, I ask that question all the time, and my mind was not capable of providing me with anything other than more craziness. And so when I set myself to ask that question and let go without answering it, guess what happened? The phone rang, and it was the driver of the tiny home. And so the driver of the tiny home talked to me about the whole process and experience, and he said, you know, it's only the last 5 miles that you have to worry about. I'm worried about all the way from Albany, Oregon to Kettle Falls, and I just had to worry about the last 5 miles all this time. And so, okay, now what's happened is life has revealed to me that I don't have to worry about it except for the last 5 miles. Okay, so I get out MapQuest, and I got the last 5 miles, and there's a trestle in the way. And so I find a way around the trestle, so I resolve that. And then when I'm talking to the driver, he says, oh, I know already about where to drive this thing. I've been up there before. Oh, and here I am. All these layers of worry are starting to be stripped away from me. And because I couldn't answer those questions, I had to surrender and allow life to answer those questions for me. So the whole dynamic of being in this process of ask, seek, knock. You know, ask and ye shall receive. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. These are spiritual principles that begin to no longer work the moment that we bring our mind into it, because our mind that lives in separation is unable to work the principle of oneness, the principle of interbeing, the consciousness of our connection and interdependency. Our mind is not able to work that if we're using those principles to figure it out. We have to allow life to reveal itself to us. Asking the question signals to life that we are ready to live the answer through us in its appropriate time. So the author says that if we establish ourselves in the awareness that life is for us, that we're not alone, and if we invite life to reveal the certainty and our capacity to make a difference, to reveal itself, how that can happen, then we experience a kind of connection to a dimension that is transpersonal, that is beyond our conditioned self, beyond our BS, and beyond what would normally stand as obstacles in our path. So to trust the process of life means to turn the challenges of our life over to life, and over to that which is bigger, that has already been able to orchestrate the dance of billions and billions of years of unfoldment. And so if we do not understand that it is in our nature for us to be connected and for there to be an intelligent dimension of our life that we can tap into, if we don't understand that we have to cultivate this consciously and intentionally, we will simply, bless you, we'll simply just be in the experience of having life happen to us, instead of us being 100% in ownership with our creating our own personal reality. So what I'd like to end with is, these are the discussion questions for those who are in the study group or spirit groups or self-study aspect of our fall commitment series. And Number one says, and you'll receive a copy of these if you're in one of those groups, and here are the copies for yourself. Study if you're interested. You can take a picture of this slide. What is one belief that you have that is casting a spell on your life? Is it foundational, operational, or hidden? So the author describes three dimensions of the spells that kind of run us when we live in the context of separation. And the foundational spells are the belief that we're separate apart, or the belief that we're alone, that we're not safe. Operational spells have to do with how we deal with what's going on in our life. And so one operational spell is the one that I was suffered from, and that is the need to control. You may need to be right. No, probably nobody in here, but you may know somebody that needs to be right. The point is that these dynamics are operational spells that keep us tethered to our conditioned past. And then there are finally hidden spells. These are things that aren't conscious to us but run us, such as our sense of not enough, our sense of inadequacy, or that we don't matter, or that we're a disappointment. We're not necessarily conscious of thinking, oh, I'm a disappointment now. But we may be living as if that's the truth of us by how we behave with people. Being a people pleaser is often one behavior that is familiar to me, as that is one false belief that I live from, is being a disappointment. Describe a time when you woke up to the fact that you were immersed in a storyteller's spin, to be able to realize, wow, I've been listening to this simulation and this voice in my head, and I'm feeling all these feelings that are based upon what is being generated within myself. That's not the truth of me. That is my default mode network. That's the part of the brain that I talked about last time that runs the simulation. But that is a real dynamic that we have identified as a storyteller, so that we begin to intervene with respect to that when it happens within us. How do you differentiate the story from the storyteller? This capacity is called metacognition. It is the capacity to be able to differentiate the storyteller from us listening to the story. We are the awareness that is listening to the storyteller. The storyteller is a byproduct of the dynamic of a separate self system. And so when we recognize that that's not the truth of us, but who we are is the awareness behind the dynamic of the storyteller, then we can separate ourselves from that. What does the phrase trying to control life cuts us off from experiencing it mean to you? And do you have an example of how this happens? So if you can see how we cut ourselves off from life just in the context of trying to control things, then the opposite becomes easier for us to initiate, to be able to just let go and let God. And then what is your understanding of asking the question and letting life answer it through you? And so I've already talked about this, and so just explore that question. And finally, what does it mean to be addicted to answers? Imagining answering that. So this dynamic of this particular chapter in what's in the way is the way, the idea that we're not alone, the idea that we often find ourselves feeling alone because the outer world that we look to for evidence of our well-being and worth is incapable of mirroring authentically who and what we are. And if we don't bring to our life an awareness that lives greater than the story or the storyteller or the reflection, then we kind of get modulated by what is happening in our life. But when we recognize the truth of who we are, when we understand that we can override the circuitry of separation, we can enter into an authentic relationship with the dimension of ourself and be in the conversation with our higher self around what is ours to live into, when we recognize that this is also a dimension of reality that is even more powerful and potent than anything that we can have or anything that we can do to affect change in the outer, once we're able to establish ourselves in an experience where there's no external happening that can diminish us, then we have owned that part of ourself that is here to make a difference. And so, how do I end? But, oh, that's right. What a rush. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gary. Words of wisdom. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God, for we know that there is only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are, wherever you are in your journey of transformation, you are definitely welcome here.